Welcome to the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast. I am Lindsay Lockett, your host. The episodes of this podcast weave together a web of healing. The conversations shared here are created with love and the belief that awareness, curiosity, authenticity, and vulnerability are our most necessary and powerful healing tools, and they are already within each one of us. The spider's web has served as a great teacher for me. Webs are designed in such a way that the tiniest vibration in one part of the web ripples out and vibrates the entire web. Through this intricate network, every thread is connected. Nothing happens to one that doesn't somehow affect the others. Each human is a strand in the collective web, and inside of you exists the threads of body, mind, spirit, emotion, ancestry, and community that make up your web of life. It is not unlike the web of neurons in our brains or the web of the nervous system that connects each system and part of our bodies together. Everything is connected. I hope this podcast helps you get to the root of how trauma has affected every part of your existence and helps you weave a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past. Hello, and welcome back to the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast. I am here with Kate Deering. She is a respected personal trainer and holistic nutritional exercise and lifestyle coach. With almost 30 years of experience in the health and fitness industry, Kate prides herself on her out-of-the-box methods that support metabolic health and improve health and body function. Kate has committed her life to finding the answers to optimal health, a high metabolism, and true happiness. Her own journey to health and happiness became the foundation of her teachings and helped her understand why health is not established with diet and overexercising, but with self-love and an increase in cellular metabolism, usually achieved with eating more and working out less. I love that. Through continual research and reading, Kate realized a high running metabolism is the foundation to great health, happiness, and longevity. As an author, mentor, consultant, and educator, she coaches people around the world on how to improve their metabolism by using real food, rest, sleep, and the right type of exercise and self-love. Kate holds degrees in psychology and exercise science and is a certified nutritional coach and a holistic exercise and lifestyle coach through the Czech Institute. And you can check out her website, katedeering.com, for more information. Kate, welcome to the podcast.
Holy cow. Oh, thanks for having me, Lindsay. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you on here. I haven't done any episodes related to food since I started this podcast, and I'm over 100 episodes in.
Oh, wow.
But it is a question that I get asked a lot. Like, what is the best way to eat for the nervous system? What is the right way to eat to heal the gut, et cetera? And as we were talking before we hit the record button, I shared with you that I used to be a health and wellness food blogger. My website was full of keto, paleo, Whole 30 recipes. I was very, very much a food purist. I was very snotty about food, actually. Very perfectionistic about food. And the whole reason that I got into health and wellness was because I had some chronic and mysterious symptoms that I didn't know what to do about. And so I got into health and wellness world, and everyone in health and wellness world was like, you need to heal your gut. You need to eliminate inflammatory foods. You need to do this. You need to do that. And so as I did at that time in my life, I outsourced my health and my wellness to what these other people outside of me were saying, which of course is contradictory, depend on what corner of the internet you're hanging out in. Totally. So I basically started throwing proverbial spaghetti against the wall to try to find the fix to heal my symptoms. And that put me on what I call the hamster wheel of wellness for about 10 years, just chasing symptoms with supplements and restrictive healing diets and really not getting very far. And then in early 2023, I don't even remember how, but I came across your book. And I'll admit, at first, I kind of rolled my eyes and I was like, I don't want to read a fucking nutrition book ever again in my life. Like, I am not interested in this. Like, it doesn't work. I don't care. But something in me was like, no, just read it. This is different. And I read it on a plane ride. Like, I read the whole book in about 6 hours. And by the end of it, I just was like, this resonates so much. Like, this feels so spacious and it feels so primal in a good way, like connecting me to my roots kind of way of eating. And I've been a fan of like raw milk and stuff like that for a really long time. My kids were raised on raw milk and all of that. But I just felt like the way that you wrote the book just anchored me into like this deep belief that I've always had that like nutrition is not as complicated as we've made it out to be.
Sure.
And we don't have to like religiously follow any type of diet, especially if it's restricting a bunch of foods, in order to be well. So I'm wondering if you can speak to what I describe as the hamster wheel of wellness. I'm sure I'm not the first person you've ever come across who has been in that cycle of chasing symptoms with restrictive diets and supplements.
Absolutely not. In fact, I think most people are usually on some level hamster wheel of wellness. You know, they're trying to fix something and they're going from, especially with social media, from one person to another person. And I'm not saying everyone has the wrong information, but I think we try to put what our symptoms are in a box instead of trying to understand our physiology better. And when we understand our physiology better, then we can make better decisions that don't have to just be like good or bad. They're like, is this the right decision for me right now with the current state of where I'm at? And so for me personally, I found this approach because, you know, I've been in the health and wellness for 30 plus years and done every sort of different diet for whatever reasons. Normally it was just to look lean and get fit. And that was usually the reason I did everything until that didn't really work for me. And it was my late 30s and I was probably hitting perimenopause with no understanding what's really what was going on with me. But everything I was doing wasn't working any longer. And I was just kind of drudging what it felt like was through quicksand, trying everything, but moving very slowly or not moving at all. And so when I found kind of the bioenergetic space, which people might call this kind of nutritional philosophy or pro-metabolic, and I found the work of Dr. Ray Pete and a few others, I started to see that maybe how I was defining health was not correct. And I was using, if I could use these different metrics to kind of define if I was in a good space, then all of a sudden I could see that I wasn't actually in a healthy place. And so when I found this approach, I was a massive training fanatic and I was doing a lot of long distance kind of aerobic events and so forth. And I was eating probably 50 to 100 carbs a day. And I don't even know how I survived during that time period doing that, but I was starting to have sleep issues, energy issues, fatigue issues, cycle issues. My menstrual cycle was starting to go. Of course, that could be attributed to perimenopause. But my body was just not behaving the way I thought it should based on all the good things that I thought I was doing. And essentially, you know, I also found out I had a very low body temperature, a very low pulse, and I had all these symptoms. And I realized that, well, that's actually the signs of a metabolism that isn't properly functioning, meaning I wasn't producing energy effectively. And because I wasn't producing energy effectively, my body was kind of working against me. I almost describe it like, you know, if you have a broken leg and maybe my metabolic rate wasn't working optimally, but I describe it as kind of like I had kind of a broken leg or a sprained leg and I was continuing to try to run on it. In fact, I was trying to run harder on it and kept wondering, well, why am I not getting better? And it was exactly for those reasons that I needed to give myself a little space and time for my system to heal itself. And so my philosophy was I kind of took things off my plate at that point. I kind of created space for my healing. I changed my diet to basically eat foods that were far more supportive to my system. And then things progressively started to get better. But it was really defining like, look, you know, for you to have a healthy and well-running metabolism, you should have a warm body. You should have a pulse that's not 50. It should be more like 70-ish or 70 to 80. You should have a good digestion. Digestion is still important. It's not that fixing that isn't going to solve all the problems. It's one way to get in, but it's certainly important. But you should have daily bowel movements. You should be sleeping through the night. You should have good energy. You should feel stable. You should be able to maintain your weight without constant exercise, which was what I was doing, or excessive dieting. Because none of that is going to actually get you to a path that's actually going to have your system running better. And specifically with women, because they've probably been on the diet kind of roller coaster most of their life, every time they've gotten themselves in one of those plans, they've kind of chipped away at how well their body's functioning. And because they kind of keep taking withdrawals from the system because they're eating less and trying to push it harder. And when we think about that, it really doesn't make sense in the way that, like, we're trying to constantly take withdrawals, whether it's in form of exercise or doing more or taking care of our children and working and trying to do everything. And we're trying to do it all perfectly. And then we're feeding ourselves, like, you know, 1500 calories and expecting our body to function optimally. And of course, we eventually get trashed with that. And, you know, and the thing that gets affected the most, and I think what you're kind of, you work towards, is the nervous system gets wrecked. And solely because, look, your nervous system runs on glucose or carbohydrates. It can run on ketones, but not all the way. And usually that comes in a survival kind of pathway, as we say, if you're going to go into that keto space. And again, it can work, and it can certainly work for, and it might be better than other options, but essentially your body wants to function with enough carbohydrates, because that's the fuel source, actually brings down the stress response in your system in a healthy body. And of course, when we get kind of messed up, we have to kind of find our way back to that response, meaning we want to kind of find a way where we become a very good glucose user, because that's going to be the way our body's going to feel kind of the most stable and the most kind of high metabolic rate and so forth.
Mm. Okay. So you touched on so many great things there. Where I want to go first is to talk about keto and low carb eating, especially for women, because I know in the last 10 to 15 years, keto and low carb dieting has become extremely popular. It's recommended for a variety of different ailments, from autoimmune issues to weight issues to name it, inflammation, whatever. It's very difficult whenever you're like a person like me, who's a researcher by nature. Like I'm like a dog with a bone. When I get on a scent, I'm going to like go into the bowels of the internet, you know, and I end up on forums from like 2006, like, you know, in my types of research. I don't like to look at mainstream sources. I like to go to whatever is fringe. And it's just interesting to me that in all of my researching of keto and low carb dieting, that there is so many studies. There are so many studies that support keto and low carb dieting for women. And yet what you talk about in your book is that your body's natural and most preferred fuel source is glucose, which comes from carbohydrates. So how do you reconcile that?
It's a great question. And what I can say is I would say that most of the research that is probably on keto-based diets is probably fairly short term. And it can be anywhere from 3 months, maybe to a year. And for that time period, and depending on what the symptoms that individual is coming from, there certainly can be a positive result, right? So let's just say you do have a massive gut issue and you have a lot of inflammation, and all of a sudden you remove all the irritants that gut could be getting irritated from. So usually like processed foods or poor oils or super fibrous foods that your body can't digest at this time can be super irritating to the gut, which can lead to autoimmune issues, allergies, brain fog, so many different things. So if all of a sudden I remove that irritant and all those irritants, right? Now we're just eating mostly fat, a little protein, and a teeny bit of carbohydrates, you're going to feel better. And so that would make total sense to me. And I'm not actually saying that these diets don't have a place. They might in some people's journey. So some people certainly can kind of fix that and feel better and then slowly and kind of incorporate back into carbohydrates. And I've definitely worked with a lot of people that are coming off of keto. Usually they've waited too long though, but there can be benefits to some of these things. So that's one of them. And you certainly see that people do certainly respond with, you know, my autoimmune issues went away. And yes, if the gut is being less irritated and now is inflamed, because most autoimmune issues are going to come from some level of leaky gut or gut irritants, then I see that that's happening. And when we look at the research, you know, it is short term. It isn't really following people for years and years, and we can't do controlled trials. And nutrition is one of those things that it's really hard for us to say, to exact, like, this is good or this is bad based on research, because most of it's just observational studies. And so there's so many flaws and all that. We just aren't going to do controlled trials for long periods of time because they're just too expensive. So we have to take these short term and kind of take them, you know, with the whole picture. So there's that component. And certainly if you all of a sudden just eat fat and you remove carbohydrates, you know, the keto diet is fairly bland and monotonous, you know, and it can, and a true keto diet is hard, you know, eating like 80% fat. I mean, and it's like, how do you go out? You know, how do you go to parties? How do you live your life? It's really constraining to a lot of people. So, but if somebody is doing it and they all of a sudden remove like all these food groups, well, you're also going to lose weight. And if you also heal the gut, because one of the things that can create disturbances in people is what they refer to as like a slight level of endotoxemia. So when your gut has, maybe you have SIBO or a kind of a bacterial overgrowth, these bacteria can produce their own internal toxins, and those endotoxins can leak into the blood and create all sorts of havoc on your system. And so obviously cleaning out the gut and reducing that inflammation is going to reduce that level of endotoxemia. And again, a whole plethora of things can improve upon that person, and then they can lose weight and they feel better. And so, yes, that all happens. I'm not going to disagree with any of that research. It's all very, very true. However, long term, there are certain vital things that carbohydrates do that having a high fat diet and using fat as your primary fuel or even ketones do not provide. And I like to, there's like kind of four main ones that I'll look at. One of them is your liver utilizes and needs glucose to convert your inactive to active thyroid. And so what we'll see on a lot of ketogenic people long-term is they have higher, or they have kind of diminished thyroid levels or low active T3. So they're not converting it as well. So that's one factor. Another one is they have less production of a gas called carbon dioxide. So in cellular metabolism, cellular respiration, you produce a gas called carbon dioxide. It's one of the kind of the end products per se. And when you use carbohydrates as fuel over fat, you'll produce about twice as much as this. And the reason that's important is because you need carbon dioxide to facilitate oxygen getting into the tissue. And it's referred to as the Bohr effect. And it's basically how your cells breathe. That's why we refer to it as cellular respiration. Like, you breathe at your lungs and you breathe at your cells. So there is that exchange of gas occurs. Oxygen is vital for a well-running metabolism. So you do need that additional carbon dioxide, and also that, because carbon dioxide can act as like an antioxidant into your system. A third reason, and probably why your reader or your listener should be kind of taking note of this, is it is the primary resource and fuel for your nervous system. And even though your nervous system can use ketones under starvation or in a ketogenic diet, it still needs some level of glucose. It's never going to be 100% ketones. So your body's always going to need some glucose. And if you don't give it any, it's going to get it some other way. And it's usually going to come from breaking your tissue down to provide itself with the needed glucose that it needs to keep survival. And the thing is, we already know this, that initially when people start ketogenic diets, that their stress hormones are actually elevated, and cortisol's elevated, glucagon's elevated. And over time, those tend to dissipate a little bit. But anytime there's intense exercise or probably something very stressful in that individual's life, we know that their stress hormones are far more elevated than other individuals. So I like to, for you're just kind of one step closer to being stressed on those kind of type of diets. And so that's important. And then the final thing, which kind of goes into some deep level biochemistry, is that there's particles like the NADH and FADH particles that are produced, the kind of energy components of cellular metabolism that our body converts into more adenosine triphosphate, that we just produce kind of a higher amount of those these NADH molecules in carbohydrate metabolism over fat metabolism. So essentially all that means is we kind of move through cellular metabolism faster when you're using glucose and fat. And so what bottom line is, over time, you will just produce more energy. And I think what people always need to understand is When we look at energy, like the energy kind of equation, your body cannot use like food directly as energy or the calories in food directly. We have to convert that into ATP or adenosine triphosphate. And that's the energy currency of the human body. And it's that conversion that's important. And if we don't convert our food into energy appropriately, then we don't have enough energy to support and run our systems, meaning we don't have enough to run our nervous system, our digestive system, our hormonal system. We have a lack of energy coming in. And if we try to keep pushing ourselves, because we're not like a car where if we have a lack of energy, our system just stops, right? And we're like, oh, we can't do anything. Nope. What happens with a human is we have a brain that just says, I'm still going to do it. And we push through things. So we try to do it in this kind of low energy state. And every time we do that, it will create this stress response in our system where we basically utilize our own tissue, bone, muscle, whatever, to kind of create additional energy to push us through to whatever we want to do. And that always comes at a cost. And again, that system is there for a reason so that we don't die when we don't have enough energy being produced. But if we chronically stay in that place, we will start to have problems. And it can take decades to get there, but it will create problems in the system. And like, as you said, the nervous system is one of the things that does get affected because it's not getting the fuel source and the energy that it needs.
Yeah. And I think something else that I'm telling my clients all the time is if you are in a stressed out state, if your nervous system is chronically activated in a fight flight state or chronically immobilized in a shutdown state, your body needs more calories, more minerals, more nutrients, because you're burning through those things much more when you're in a stressed out state than when you're not in a stressed out state.
100%.
And all of my female clients especially are like, but what if I gain weight? So I bet you get that question a lot. Like, what if I start eating this way and then I gain weight? But their goal is, you know, and especially like so many people come to me, I've had this belief myself. I won't even say that I'm totally like over this belief or that I've totally deconstructed it yet, is like, well, when my nervous system is more regulated and I'm not chronically stressed out, aren't I going to naturally lose weight? Like, how do you meet that resistance that people have about eating more often, regulating their nervous systems, and the possibility that they're going to gain weight and not lose it?
Yes, that is the million-dollar question. So I always, if somebody is in a dysregulated state, I mean, high anxious or high nervous system, not sleeping well, I mean, I basically let them know, I go, look, this is not a time to lose weight. Right. If we try to lose weight during this time period, we're just going to stress your system more, because weight loss or fat loss is inherently stressful to your system because we have to put you in an energy deficit. And so we got to take that off the table right off the bat. And so then I go, look, we need to focus on other things right now. We need to focus on like your sleep. We need to focus on your energy and feeling more stabilized and whatever symptoms that you might be experiencing this time, that's where we're going to put our focus. And that's where we're going to like have wins if we can take it off the scale. Now, that doesn't mean you should just eat uncontrollably and eat carbohydrates for whatever you want to do. Certainly, that doesn't mean that. It means that we probably strategically need to set up times within your day that I know that you'll need more carbohydrates. Those tools you can be like in the morning or maybe around times if you are doing any sort of exercise, that we have you have enough fuel available during these time periods. If, you know, if someone's gut is really messed up, again, for those individuals, some do better with kind of less meals. It kind of depends on how they feel, as well as others do better with just smaller meals because they just can't manage a big meal at that point. It just feels too much. It's too heavy for them. And so we might do a little bit smaller meals so that they can kind of manage things through the day. It all kind of depends. But once I take that off, and I've seen this many, many times, when people get through whatever stressful experience they're having, and then they're going to be sleeping better, right? Then their body's going to be able to regulate. Then they're not going to be driving the stress system all the time. Then the truth is, yes, they should be able to start losing weight, certainly a lot easier at this point in time. And a lot of it is because they are just sleeping better. And the most opportune time for you to actually burn more body fat or a higher percentage of body fat is certainly while you're sleeping. Because we use fat as fuel at a very safe rate while we're sleeping. So when I always say, yes, I prefer to use carbohydrates as the main energy source, it doesn't mean I'm like, should never burn fat, because you are burning fat. You're burning fat talking to me right now. You know, we burn fat all day long. It's not a this or that. It's like, we're doing both at the same time right now. But in times that you are stressed or your demands go up, usually your body prefers the quicker energy source, and that's going to come in the form of the carbohydrates. And then when you're resting and sleeping and doing nothing, then yeah, you're actually, your body will prefer to utilize more fat as fuel, and it can safely do it because it is a slower fuel source. But when we try to force our body to use fat all the time, and then we have to produce ketones because our body thinks we're in starvation mode, then I don't really think that's the most effective route long-term to provide you with long-term health. And it certainly can be used as a tool for certain things. I mean, again, I've seen it, certainly people, you know, cure their diabetes or autoimmune issues. I've seen all of those things. But when they say they cure things like diabetes, then I'm like, well, if you're cured, then you should be able to handle carbohydrates now with no problem. And they can't, right? Now, they only are cured as long as they don't have carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. But your body should be able to be able to use these things. And so if you can't, then I wouldn't say you're cured. You're just removing something that's creating that symptom.
Yeah, that reminds me a lot of, people who are okay until they get faced with one of their triggers. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm doing so well. My nervous system is doing so well until I get faced with this trigger. So then they live their lives in avoidance of the trigger so they never have to face it. But well, that's not actual healing.
Exactly.
Okay. Awesome. So we're on the same page physically and emotionally.
Yep. Yeah. And that's a good point.
Yeah. So here on page 15 of your book, you have a bullet point list of signs of a high metabolic rate. And I actually quote this list. I just finished writing an ebook called Nourish Your Nervous System. And that's one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on my show. I quote you so much in the physical nourishment aspect or chapter of the book, particularly because I'm talking about how when you nourish your metabolism, you are nourishing your nervous system. So if you're wondering the best way to eat, eat to nourish your metabolism, because then by default, you are nourishing your nervous system. And here on page 15 of your book, you list the signs of a high metabolic rate as being a 97.8 body temperature upon waking, 98.6 midday, pulse between 75 and 90 beats per minute, warm feet, hands, and nose all day, 1 to 3 bowel movements per day, urinating four to five times a day, not 10 to 12 times a day, good hormone function, healthy sex drive, no PMS, fertile, shiny hair, smooth and healthy skin, strong nails, 7 to 9 hours of deep, uninterrupted sleep, feeling happy and content, having good energy all day, and maintaining your weight without dieting and excessive exercise. And what I talk about in the book is that basically what you're describing is a safe and social ventral vagal state in the nervous system, especially the emotional piece of feeling happy and content, getting good sleep, and having good energy. So I'm wondering, I don't even know if I know how to phrase the question. Maybe it's just more of a conversation of, do you agree with me that nourishing your metabolism will nourish your nervous system, first of all? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, well, the entire nervous system is the conductor, right? It's like the lead, and because it is kind of telling your system, and it's the response, right? If we didn't have our nervous system, it's like how we respond to the environment around us. So it's constantly telling us if things are good or bad, or should we fear, should we fight, you know, what's happening. And it's giving our systems feedback. And it's right. And then if we are stressed, all that is basically chemicals in our body telling our body, like, you know, go ahead, raise your heart rate, get ready to run, dilate your eyes, right? Get more glucose in the blood, because we are going to need it, because our heart rate's going now. We're going to have to, you know, whatever. And so absolutely. I mean, that's the initial response to everything. And I think what people should understand, because when I always say things like a stress response, or, you know, your nervous system is very active within the stress response. And when I reference things like stress, and I go back to kind of the energy standpoint, a stress, in my opinion, is any time the body has more demands on it versus what it is the ability to produce energy with the resources it has available. Meaning, if you can't meet your demands with the resources you have, you will always have a stress response, regardless of where the stress is coming from. It could be mental, emotional, physical. Your body doesn't care where it's coming from. It will have the exact same biological response. The nervous system is going to act the exact same way, whether you are in the event or you're thinking about the event. And that's PTSD, right? Like, we as humans have the capacity to create this biological response inside of us without it even happening. And so, because we're thinking about it. And I actually say, I go, look, it's never actually the event that's stressing you out. It's you thinking about the event that's stressing you out. And it's that thought that's activating your brain, your nervous system, the entire HPA axis, the chemical exposures, all of that's happening based on what you're thinking about. And so, you know, and knowing that that situation is created and now you're having that stress response and the cortisol, the adrenaline, everything's going on, then we know that, you know, that's, if we can kind of support your nervous system in a lot of different fashions, then we can kind of downregulate that entire response and our body's going to become healthier.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So obviously in the health and wellness world, there's research that supports literally anything being health food, right?
Totally.
you can even look up there's air quotes, you know, research. I would encourage people to scroll to the very, very bottom of the study and see who funded the study, but different conversation. But, you know, there's scientific studies, air quotes, that support, you know, that using omega-6 fats, for example, polyunsaturated fats are better for you and that saturated fat is bad. And there's studies that say, like, there's no difference in the nutritional profiles between factory farmed meat and grass fed meat, like things like that. So I know that that can be really confusing for people who are trying to educate themselves, to empower themselves, to make sovereign decisions about what they eat. But then they go into the research and there's research that supports both sides of it. And I know that that can seem really, really confusing. So I'm wondering if you could speak to that at all.
That is a kind of a tough point to argue. And it's always one of my qualms with the nutritional space is we just don't have great research. And it's just because it's excessively expensive. And, you know, you would hope that the NHI would spend more money studying nutrition, but unfortunately they don't. And so we kind of have to take, you know, we can look at like communities and we can look at different cultures. I mean, you have to take all of it with a grain of salt and kind of create your own opinion and then your own experience, you know? So I always say things like people about the keto world. I'm like, well, we have zero long-term data that these diets are healthy long-term. We have no cultures that are really eating these types of diets. So, you know, we have people that are certainly studying and that say they've done them for decades. You know, we have these anecdotal research. You can take that as a grain of salt. That's part of it. So you have to kind of take this cumulative effect of what is all of this meaning? And, you know, the truth is it is hard to navigate, you know, and I would say the same thing about my book. I'm like, you can read it, you can check all the research, but you should take it within consideration of everything. You know, what I'm trying to teach you is not really about, although there are certain, you know, foods that I certainly recommend based on maybe how you can tolerate them. But my goal is more to help you understand your physiology so that you can make better choices, understanding, well, this is how a healthy physiology should work. These are the nutrition, this is the foods that your body will run on most effectively when healthy. If you are stressed, you know, and your body has more demands and you actually need more carbohydrates, then you have to be careful what you hear there. Because, I mean, some people might hear what Kate said, I can have more carbohydrates. So I'm going to eat 17 cookies because I feel stressed right now. And because I'm feeling that I need more. That's not really what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when the demands do go up, then you're going to, like you said, you're going to need more fuel, but you also need more minerals. Anytime either we have whether we have a high metabolism or we have a stressed metabolism, both actually will produce a considerable amount of energy. They just do it differently. But both will have the same demands, meaning they both need fuel and they both need a ton of nutrients and minerals. They still will need those. And so, you know, my thoughts are like, well, where can we get those from food? You know, where are the best routes and what are the most nutritious foods that we can provide ourselves with that? Let's also have to take into consideration how well your gut is working, because if it isn't working well, then some foods that I recommend might not work well for you. So we have to consider that. Do you have blood sugar issues? Because if you do, then going ahead and eating tons of carbohydrates at once may not look well for you initially. So we have to be able to guide ourselves through these paths and just have a better understanding of like, okay, Cade said, you know, my nervous system needs fuel. I'm like, okay, well, that might mean like maybe eating some carbohydrates at every meal throughout the day to kind of maintain some of those needs might be a better response than waiting till the end of the day and then eating an entire cake. because that's what's going to happen if you kind of restrict all day long. I always tell people it's like the restrict and binge cycle when they're doing carbohydrates. It's like, and this is why they always think carbs are bad for them, because they restrict them all week and they, you know, first they kind of feel better and they feel like more clear-minded and that's kind of the adrenaline response going on. And then something happens or all of a sudden their brain is finally like, we need carbs now. And at that point in time, you're usually not going to make a good decision. Like you're not going to go grab some orange juice. You're going to go grab 16 cookies or a pint of ice cream. And then of course, then you feel horrible because you've done that to yourself. And then shame, guilt, you know, digestion issues come off. So you vow off of it all again. You tell yourself you're a sugar addict and then you rinse and repeat. And then you do the same cycle over 2 weeks again. And I did that. That was kind of my MO for carbohydrates. And it wasn't until I understood that I need to calm things down. You know, first I need to get my sleep under control, but I need to provide myself with enough fuel to kind of regulate the system. And that also included enough minerals because I needed both. And I needed other nutrients too, whether it be B vitamins or maybe additional magnesium or just other micro minerals that I needed to kind of keep my system working and functioning optimally. And that took a little bit of time. You know, nobody got here in a day. It's taken time. And so it can take a little time to unwind. But I will tell you is once people will add carbohydrates back into their diet more periodically, their systems will settle. And usually they end up sleeping a little bit better. They feel a little bit better. They feel more regulated. And, you know, you kind of have to go to step A to B to C to D because, and then you know, do a few things, feel a little bit better, and then you'll have the capacity to do a few more things and then kind of go that route.
Yeah, I love that sort of titrated approach because I know I've experienced this myself. In fact, I did it whenever I read your book. I was like, oh, and in a week, I like shifted everything over into trying to eat more pro-metabolically.
Yeah.
And what I noticed was like every time I would drink some orange juice with collagen in it, within like 30 minutes, I had this weird burning sensation in my stomach. And it was like, oh, like my body's not used to having juice because for years, for over a decade prior to that, juice was bad.
Sure.
Right? Like juice was too much fructose, too high in sugar. It's going to spike your blood sugar. Because I was also in the like Weston A. Price traditional foods movement as well, which I still find so much value in that information. But some of it, I want to be like, stop, like just stop telling people that juice is bad. You know, like, and certainly like there's a difference between like highly processed juice that's like shelf stable versus like fresh juice. And of course there's differences in that. But anyway, suffice it to say is like, I think that the titrating of like, okay, I'm going to take a few steps, then that becomes my new normal. Then I have some capacity to take a couple more steps and then that becomes my new normal. And it's like one of my teachers, Caitlin D, she says it's like turning a dial, not flipping a switch. And I think in people that have dysregulated nervous systems, and this is true for me as well, we can get into this binary thinking of like, oh, okay, well, if what I'm doing is bad, air quotes, yep, then I need to quickly shift and start doing what is good. And that can be like a super shock to the system, whether that's emotionally or physically with food.
100%. Yeah, I talk about that in my book because when I kind of found this approach, I'm like, I'm changing everything in one day. And I did. And I talk about like, my cholesterol went up, you know, I broke out in a rash. I had all these wonky things happen to me. Luckily, I kind of kept persisting because it just made sense to me. And so, you know, and then I just realized I probably went too fast, and I did. And so, you know, now if I coach people, it's like slow and steady wins the race. You know, let's do a few things, let's change a few things, and then let's just see how your body responds. And then we'll kind of go from there versus trying to do everything at one time. And kind of the body will respond a little bit wonky. If, you know, if you haven't had a lot of carbohydrates for years, then you're going to have to kind of go slow and steady when you reintroduce them. And it's just finding out which ones you can kind of respond to. And because, you know, maybe your digestive system is adapted to that too. So maybe you're not producing as many of these enzymes that you need to break these foods down. So it's same thing with like milk. Look, if you give up milk, and your body's like, you're not having milk anymore, we're not going to really produce the lactase enzyme very much. So if you all of a sudden start drinking 3 cups of milk, yeah, your body probably can't process that. So, you know, maybe going with an ounce and slow and steady and allowing your system to kind of wake that system back up is a better route to go.
Yeah, that's great advice. Do you mind if I shift over into sharing a bit of like my personal journey and what I've noticed with like sure. my metabolism and weight and stuff like that. And I'd love to get your perspective and your feedback if you feel sure. like it. Yeah.
Go.
So 5 years ago, well, actually 6 years ago, goodness, 2018 was 6 years ago. goodness. So 6 years ago, I started going through what I would call the most like stressful time of my life. Basically, like everything that could go wrong in my life was going wrong. Like Murphy's Law was at work all the time. And at the end of 2018, going into the beginning of 2019, I got into a very acute stage of stress. And I went about 5 months without sleeping. I could go to sleep at like 10, 10:30 p.m. And by 1 a.m., I was like, before I even had a chance to wake up, I was already panicking. Like I would just wake up in this like adrenaline. Or if I would try to like fall back to sleep, I would kind of doze for a second. And then it was like, all of a sudden, like I'm just awake for no reason again. So I got into that pattern. I was experiencing a ton of health anxiety because I had some pelvic issues going on. So my thoughts were only focused on, oh my God, what is wrong? Do I have cancer? Do I have this? Do I have that? So just fueling the stress response even more. And I started to lose weight in 2018 before the stress became acute. And I remember one morning in 2018, I woke up and I put my feet on the floor after getting out of bed. And I was like, I feel lighter. Oh my goodness, I feel lighter. And I went down to the basement, dusted off the scale and got on the scale. And I was over 10 pounds lighter than the last time I had weighed myself. And I'm not a big weigher. So it's a rare thing for me to weigh myself, but I had lost weight and I was like, wow, I didn't even try. I remember texting my mom and being like, Mom, I lost like 12 pounds without even trying. And she was like, well, if you figure out what you did, let me know, you know? And so I continued to go on. And then like a month later, I would weigh myself again and I'd lost another 10 pounds without trying. I wasn't doing anything. And so what I thought at the time, and I even got on Instagram with my old food blogger account, and it was just like, this is what intuitive eating has allowed me to do. Look at how easy it is. The weight is just falling off. I haven't changed anything. I'm not over-exercising. I'm not restricting food. Like, look at how easy intuitive eating is. Did not know that those first months of weight loss were actually indicating that my body was becoming more and more and more stressed out until it peaked. And it peaked in March of 2019. I actually attempted suicide because I was in such a dark, dark place. And I had lost 40 pounds in a matter of like 3 months, like a few months. Like it was drastic weight loss. I look back at pictures of myself and like my face looks like sunken in and like my teeth look too big for my face and my glasses look too big for my face. And it was horrible. And I remember the feeling that I had was like, I'm shriveling up and dying. Like I'm literally, my body is wasting away and does not feel safe to exist. So I checked myself into the psych hospital. I got on a bunch of psych meds. I got out. And that's when I was like, I have got to figure out what it is that got me to this point and mm-hmm. heal it, because mm-hmm. I can't ever do this again. Learned about the limbic system from Dynamic Neural Retraining System. Tried that. It wasn't a great fit for me, but it opened my eyes to this world that wasn't related to gut health that made sense in the context of my entire life and the trauma that I've experienced. So I have a high ACEs score. I experienced both PTSD and complex PTSD. I have a PTSD diagnosis. Like, I have a very stressful childhood, emotional abandonment, physical abuse, religious trauma, like all of it. So it made sense to me then that I was like, okay, I clearly have a bunch of unprocessed shit that my body is like, okay, I can't hold this for you anymore. It's time to face it. So I started facing it. It's now 5 years later, and I started gaining weight back. And I was initially really happy with gaining weight back because I was very underweight. I got down to 120 pounds, which is too small for me. But the weight gain hasn't stopped. I continue to just gain weight. And I'm not dieting. I'm not trying to do anything to lose weight. I walk. I do eat mostly pro-metabolically. I do try to combine fats, carbs, and proteins for every meal and snack whenever I have them. I don't drink alcohol. I maybe go out to eat once a week or something, and I don't try to follow any rules when I go out to eat. Like, I just enjoy myself, or if I go to a friend's house or something like that. But I'm curious, and I'll be 41 at the end of this month. So I'm definitely in the perimenopause stage. I'm on bioidentical progesterone at the moment. So I'm just curious, from your perspective, with the very limited amount of information that I've given you, if you have any kind of insight on like a direction that I could go, because I also know that the primary listeners of my podcast and the people who follow me are around the same age as me. And maybe they haven't experienced that extreme of a breakdown the way that I did, but the hormone changes, the nervous system dysregulation, the unprocessed trauma, and then all this confusion about what to eat, what should I eat, when should I eat? And all of that is kind of, I think it will resonate with my listeners, even though I'm asking you a personal question, if that makes sense.
It does. And first, let me say, I'm really sorry you had to experience that stuff and got to that place. That's rough. And so my first question would be, though, like, when you were losing all this weight, thinking back, what were you eating? Were you eating? Were you eating enough? You were just skipping meals? Like, what was happening?
I wasn't skipping meals. I was eating. I've always been a breakfast eater. Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel good if I don't eat breakfast. So mm-hmm. I definitely was eating. Was I intentionally combining macros? No. But like, I was eating. I was using like collagen powder pretty regularly. I've been a big bone broth person for a long time. I don't remember like a lot of food restriction, other than when my health started to decline, I really doubled down on like food purity. And so I was definitely avoiding processed foods. I wasn't eating sugar. I was doing a lot of baking with nut flour because I was grain free at that time. So like muffins out of almond flour, bread out of almond flour. Like, I was using nut milks because I wasn't doing dairy. Because I was in that, you know, paleo kind of mindset. But I don't remember that I was restricting my food a lot. And actually, whenever it was at its worst, from like January to March of 2019, I was eating all the time. Like, I couldn't eat fast enough. I would get up in the middle of the night to eat because it would temporarily relieve the anxiety. But it was like I couldn't eat fast enough to stop losing the weight. It was like the more I ate, the more weight I lost. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand for myself what happened, because I was clearly in a very, very stressed out state. I can't even imagine what my cortisol would have been if I had tested it at that time, or my adrenaline for that matter. Like, I can't even imagine the level of stress hormones that were going through my body. But I was not restricting the amount of food that I was eating because I was actually so hungry.
Yeah, well, I mean, when the system is being led by those hormones, they will increase the demands, right? Basically, it's kind of like the chicken or the egg. I mean, are they perpetuating me elevating right? Something in your system is in fight or flight, right? Like that whole entire system is kind of unregulated. And so if those hormones, they're constantly going to be telling your body, we need more fuel, we need more fuel, we need more fuel. So that's why they're breaking your tissue down, right? I mean, if you're losing weight, then the system is saying, we need something. You know, you see that, I mean, I'm just going to say, you see that in cancer patients because cancer is a highly metabolic situation where the body starts breaking it down. You can see that in a diabetic where their body isn't able to get fuel in, so it starts eating itself to try to find it. So like, you know, and I don't, and I'm assuming you had plethora of blood labs done that would probably take those two things off the table. I mean, because it was like, well, was it either that, what were you expect? I mean, because a highly stressed state can make someone become diabetic, you know, because a lot
I wasn't diabetic. Like my blood work came back normal.
Right. I mean, and then the other thought is when the body is overstressed too, basically we're going to shut down thyroid function. And so, you know, is there something else occurring? Is there a thyroid issue going on? Is there a thyroid conversion issue going on? Is the system just hasn't fully come back to regulation at this point? So, I mean, I would normally have to like look at someone's kind of food log and go like, okay, what is happening? How much weight are we gaining? How much are we eating that is creating a percentage, right? If like, well, I'm gaining like a pound a week. I'm like, okay, well, what are you eating right now? Do we know? Like how much, right? Because whatever's going on in the body, if you're eating more than the body is able to convert into energy, you know, then you're going to gain weight. Yeah. Right. And so when we look at that equation, because people always like to do, you know, calories in, calories out. Are you using all your calories that you're consuming? And I add another kind of part to that equation. It's like, well, you have to convert those calories first. Right. And then in the equation, you know, you need the right fuel source. You need the right nutrition because there's so many nutrients involved in the entire cellular respiration. And so if you're deficient in any of those, that can create an energy issue. You need enough oxygen. So whether there's a breathing issue or a carbon dioxide production issue, or maybe someone's a mouth breather or they're anemic or something of that fact, right? But that's creating a deoxygenation, that's going to create an energy production issue. And so if they're eating in an excess of calories, you're not able to convert it, then there's going to become a surplus. And then the other part of it is thyroid. If you don't have enough either production or you're not able to convert it, then that's going to kind of back up the whole system. And so, you know, because thyroid, we can actually reference it as the switch. And it kind of switches things up or down, depending on how, if you have a well-running thyroid, meaning it will speed up how fast you produce the energy. And if you don't have enough, it slows it all down. So if you have food coming in, it's a slower process and we can't convert it and we don't need it, then we just store it. So there's a lot of different, and I actually have the fifth one I've kind of added in there these days is sun exposure. You know, are you getting enough sun? Are you getting out in the morning and getting sun? Are you staying in your house all the time? Are you regulating your circadian rhythm? Are you sleeping okay right now? Like, because all of those things will tend to push more someone into this kind of weight gain. And again, you know, if your body's been through something severely stressful, initially it kind of rebounds with this, oh my God, I need to feel protected. And so I'm going to hold on to things because that almost killed me, right? Because your body has, you know, it's basically saying there are kind of protective measures into it. When you go into kind of starvation mode, like you were going, your body was just catabolizing itself and eating itself. It doesn't want to do that. So, you know, because it does, because it knows if it keeps going, you're going to die, right? You only catabolize so much of you. And so the way it offsets that is it tells your body to slow down all your internal functions, right? Basically we drop down the basal metabolic rate or how much energy we need to function all our systems at rest. And your body says, slow that down because we're running too hot right now. And so when you go through that recovery, it's kind of like, well, we have to give our system now time to recover. So we have to go back to all these other symptoms. What's your temperature and pulse? How are you sleeping through the night? How's your energy through the day? And then kind of assess and address those. Because if those systems are dysregulated, and you're trying to lose weight or And I don't know if you're trying to, but if we try to put someone in some level of calorie deficit, or we're like, we'll go work out a ton more, and your body's still got the broken leg, as we say, back to my initial analogy, then we're only going to get so far, right? Yeah. And so there, I would have like a lot of additional questions, because, you know, is that completely unusual? No, I guess I've kind of seen it when people have gone into recovery, but we want more information and data so we can be more clear. And so my thoughts would be like, well, if you're not already, it would be like, you know, food log and try to see exactly how much you're eating and when you're eating. And is there possibly a blood sugar issue now? I mean, if you went keto for a lot of years, that's a great way to become insulin resistant, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if somebody's eating, and if you are slightly and having some blood sugar issues now based on a ketogenic diet, because I've seen that a million times too. I've seen super thin people come off of a keto or carnivore diet and start eating carbs and eating too many of them, and their blood sugars look diabetic. And yeah, they're super, super thin. And that's a temporary response. But because you're coming off of high stress and then keto, well, your body might not be responding very well. And yeah, so, you know, and then, so then I might change the macronutrients on you, in the sense of like, well, maybe you need to lower your fat a little bit, and see if your body responds better. And mm-hmm. because sometimes if there's too much fat in the diet to carbohydrates and you're in a stress state, then your body has a harder time using the carbohydrates because there's too much fat in the blood at the same time. So I would kind of mess with that a little bit and see, does that fix it? But still wanting to know more clearly, look, how much are you eating right now? Like, what does that even look like? Right? Because yeah, we all think we're doing a lot, you know, and I tell people that all the time, I eat plenty. And then they log it. I'm like, is this it? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, this is like 1300 calories.
Yeah, that's actually what happened. I was very opposed to logging my food and counting macros and counting calories and all that before I read your book, because I do have a history of what I would call orthorexia. And so just like the micromanaging and perfectionism around food, to me, at first the thought of tracking macros or tracking calories was like, nope, that's going to put me back into this like needing to have control and micromanaging my food and trying to be a perfectionist about it and all that. But then I was like, okay, I'm not in the same state that I was years ago. I have a much more, a nervous system with much more capacity. It's okay for me to try this. And so I did start tracking them, and I wasn't eating enough whenever I started tracking. So I was like, okay, Kate says I need to be eating more. So then I started eating more food. And I'm not tracking anymore, but I also, so I'm on the autism spectrum. So I also tend to get very hyper fixated on certain foods. So I'll have the same breakfast like every day for 6 months. And so I do that a lot, but then I know I'm getting the macros that I need. I'm getting the calories that I need, and I don't have to calculate it every day, because it's just easy to be like, I have the same thing for breakfast every day. I know exactly what the macros of that breakfast are.
Sure.
But I did have some blood work done on my thyroid specifically in April of last year. And according to like the standard range, my thyroid was fine. But I know enough about functional medicine to know that functional ranges are a lot wider than standard ranges are. And so I went and looked at the functional range of my thyroid, and functionally my thyroid was slightly low. And so I thought that through more pro-metabolic eating over time, that would kind of even out, and that I would nourish my thyroid and my metabolism and all of that, and that would help. But I'm continuing to gain weight. And so I'm at the heaviest weight I've ever been in my entire life. I don't feel comfortable in my body. I do desire to be smaller. And it's not because I don't want to be skinny. I have like a large bone structure. I'm 5'5", but I have a large bone. Like I have wide hips, and I've always had an ass and, you know, stuff like that. And I don't want to get rid of those things. But just something about how I'm feeling in my body just doesn't feel right. And I feel uncomfortable in my clothes and bending over to tie my shoes, and just think like there's a fat roll in the way that's never been there before. And when I got my refill of bioidentical progesterone, my doctor was like, well, you know, you could just have a genetic set point for a higher weight. And I literally wanted to like stick my finger in my mouth and be like, whoa, like vomit that out. Like, no, I refuse to accept that. I refuse to accept that getting older equals like my genes mean I'm going to get stuck at some uncomfortable weight for the rest of my life. Like, I don't accept that. But it has been really, really difficult to kind of figure, and my sleep, like sleep has been a lifelong struggle for me. I was, even when I was at a really healthy weight, didn't have to exercise to keep my weight healthy. Even when I wasn't eating well, sleep has always been a struggle for me. So I go through flares of insomnia, and if a flare happens to last too long and I start feeling like I'm not functioning, I do keep like a backup supply of medication on hand, and I can start using that to get my sleep back on track again. So I don't know. This is one of those like complex trauma situations that I can tell that like patterns and events that have happened for my whole life are probably still informing my current health status, and then throw perimenopause in as a wrench in things, you know? And it's like, I don't know, the perfect storm or something. But yeah, I was just curious what your feedback was about that. So
yeah, I mean, it is another kink. I always think that perimenopause is another kind of stressor to the system that you have to now regulate. And women are more prone to the stress cycle. So, but that's where I'm like, well, temperature and pulse are important, because if your temperature is still subpar, then you're still having an energy production issue. And so we need to assure that you have everything in line, that you're producing enough energy. And when you're producing more energy, sleep will be better. And so if there's on that side of the equation an energy production issue, then it's like, well, what one of these things could possibly be getting in the way, right? Is there enough food and nutrients? Okay, if those things are covered, great. Is there an oxygenation issue going on? Is there possibly a thyroid issue? Is there sun issue, meaning, you know, do you get up and you're inside and on your computer all day long?
There is a sun issue for 7 months out of the year, because I live in northeastern Minnesota. So yeah, we have very long, dark, cold winters with, you know, sometimes only 7 hours of daylight, maybe. So yes, that is definitely an issue for me.
Yeah. And then there is like, you know, how much time are you spending on your phone and your computer and getting all these whacked? I mean, are you doing that late at night, right? All these things are going to kind of, is there, okay. You know, should you get your vitamin D checked? Like, I would try that too. I would get your cholesterol checked to see if that's elevated, because those are also going to be like high cholesterol will also be a sign that there could be a thyroid issue, and not just looking at your thyroid numbers. So there would be other things I might test to see if those are off. But ultimately it would still be like, well, what is the number that you can maintain your weight at, you know? And for a lot of women too, as they get older and get into perimenopause, they don't manage glucose as well because they've been in super stress situations. So like I said, sometimes when they start to log, it's like, well, they're eating 100 grams of fat because you're used to eating a ton of fat because you're keto. And I'm like, that might just be too much. You know, maybe we need to pull that down some and kind of shift that to be a lower amount, because some women start doing better with a lot lower fat over time. And it seems to make their body able and capable of using the glucose in their blood better, right? Because if not, it might just be staying there. Maybe it's having too much come in. It's staying in there too long. Your body isn't using it. So the body just says, we're going to store all this. Right. And that's the cycle it's going through. And it's not inherently that you don't need it. Right. You still might have an energy issue. It's just that we have to find a way. Maybe there's something hindering it from getting into the cell, you know, and there can be like there are certain blocks that kind of hinder this entire process of energy production, stresses being one of them, and all the stress hormones. But the endotoxemia, the endotoxins, those can also, so guts can play a role in all that. And certainly the polyunsaturated fats. Excessive iron in the tissue, that can also create a problem. So there are things that might just be inhibiting the process from happening. And so it's focusing on, well, what can, like, if sleep is still all wonky, then I'm like, okay, well, let's figure out how much food you actually need to maintain weight. What does that look like? Do we need to change the macronutrients? And then I would be doing everything possible to try to get your sleep under control. And some of that can be like, you might need light, you know, if you're sitting inside all day long and no light, well, that can certainly dysregulate you. And that's certainly going to play a role in your sleep. And that's certainly going to play a role in your circadian rhythm. And that's certainly going to play a role in how your body responds and if it gains weight, because it's kind of stressed. Like, we need light. So that those things, although don't seem super complex, I think everybody wants to like, tell me some secret thing. I'm like, it's not. There's nothing secret.
There's no
just like habits, right? These are just like, we used to live a life where we were outside a lot more. Totally. And our lives have transitioned in the last decades, and even more so in the last 5 years, post-COVID. You know, we don't go outside as much. We stay inside. People don't even go outside to go to work because they work in their houses. And so all of those things have mattered. And now, and myself included, like I sit in front of a computer way more than I ever used to. And I can feel it. Days that I'm on my computer for 6 or 7 hours a day sitting and doing these, I feel it. And so I know it's inherently great for me. So I do my best to kind of offset it. But, you know, if you're feeling certain ways, then it's like, well, what do you did if you take a complete social media break and got off internet for a few weeks? What would that do to you? Could you get outside, just have a habit of going outside in the morning and getting some sun in your eyes and trying to get to bed by a certain hour? And you did that religiously for like a month. Would that change things? Probably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm willing to do it. I get outside a lot more this time of year than I do, you know, in January when it's 40 below where I live.
Yeah, I would check your vitamin D levels too if you haven't and find out.
Yeah.
Being in the northern climates being in the northern climates up there, I mean, they're bottomed out. And so, you know, for some people, they need to get on a D supplement. And that does, because D supplements will help regulate the thyroid too.
Right.
So they have so many things they can help. You don't need to be on indefinitely. And certainly if you have sun exposure now, that could work. But if you are bottomed out with your D, then yeah, you might need something like that.
Yeah. Whenever I was super, super sick and I had blood work done that showed everything was fine, my vitamin D at that time, so this was like middle of winter, 2018, 2019, my vitamin D was 85 at that time. And I was still just really, really struggling.
What were you supplementing at the time?
I was supplementing with vitamin D at that time. Yeah. And my naturopath was like, okay, stop. Your vitamin D is high enough.
Yeah.
so I did. And then like I had it checked a couple years later and it was like back down to 40. So then I started supplementing with it again and I haven't really had it checked in a couple years.
And like, you know, it's not just one thing, right? They all play a role together. And the thing is, like, if you have, you know, in the equation of energy production, right? You need food, you need nutrition, you need oxygen, you need thyroid hormone and sun. Any one of those, if you're deficient in it, can offset the other. But at the same time, you can have all of those. But if you have an excessive amount of stress in your life, there's going to be a kink in that entire production, right? It's going to, like I said, you will still produce a lot of energy, but you'll do it differently. You're not going to do it with high thyroid function. You'll do it with stress hormones. And when you go through the pathways of using stress hormones, it's always going to come at a cost. What that cost is, it's going to just be catabolic to your system, and it's going to create kind of more symptoms per se. And I think we as a society, we have to take our entire life into consideration. If you go, look, I've had trauma all my life, right? How old are you, 41?
41, yeah.
Yeah. So I've had it for 3 decades. And now you're trying to regulate the system. Finally, it's trying to, and your body's trying to recover. Like, look, we need to feel safe with this. You know, so this could be a part of the path. I get that's where you're at. But at the same time, if we can give ourselves space, but still also kind of give ourselves enough information and kind of tweak things, then, you know, then have trust in your body that's doing the right things for you.
Yeah.
Because if you do those things and not, again, because what the other part is, you know, as soon as we gain weight, then we start going down this entire other limbic loop, you know, and we go, right? I mean, we go down that space. So it's kind of like, hold everything together. You know, you've done a lot of work. We have to give ourselves credit for all the things that we have done because we're unwinding things, but also then trying to be really present in our space where we are today and just try to live our lives, you know, and be in the best space. But at the same time, I get it, right? Nobody wants to be on this continuum of why am I still gaining weight? Because there is a physiological answer to that. I just don't have enough information to kind of specifically tell you.
Yeah, of course. And I love that you, because this is something I say all the time too, is everything is connected. So whenever you're talking about, like, you know, even the amount of sunlight that you get can have this trickle down effect into all these other systems and processes in your body, or the amount of glucose and carbs that you're getting can have a trickle down effect into all these other systems and processes in your body. And like that very much aligns with my work where I'm like, if you change one thing, it's going to change the dynamic of everything else to some extent. And so something that I'm really, really grateful for is like, I feel
at this time in my life, because of the nervous system work I've done and unburdening my nervous system and processing trauma and all of that, like I feel more emotionally resilient than I've ever felt in my life. And I guess what's confusing about that to me is it's like, how can I be emotionally resilient, but I don't feel physically resilient right now? Like that's kind of a little bit of a mind fuck for me. because I do feel like I can handle emotional stress better. And I feel like the tools that I teach my clients and stuff also help them handle emotional stress better. But then sometimes the physical issues naturally dissolve as the stress lowers and as you become more emotionally resilient. And sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes new things come up. And whether that's a result of, you know, age and hormone changes, or like you said, sunlight. Like we just came out of 7 months of winter, you know, and it was dark. And like now I'm outside every day because I need the sun and I crave it. But yeah, everything you're saying from a physiological, physical standpoint absolutely echoes what I teach from an emotional, energetic, spiritual standpoint. So I really, really appreciate that. And I guess if I could just ask you like maybe one last question before we wrap up.
Sure.
For someone who has felt like they're on that hamster wheel of healing and they're, you know, jumping from one diet to the next, trying to solve all their problems and heal everything in their life, like if they wanted to start really anchoring into eating to nourish their metabolism and their nervous system, what would be like one or two easy entry points or places to start?
It's a good question. And it can be hard to say because everyone is a little bit different. But what I tell a lot of people is, you know, focus on one meal. And usually I say focus on your breakfast, because breakfast is a good anchor meal. And because it's the break from your fast. And for most people, they need to eat something upon waking because their glycogen stores have been depleted through the night and they're about to start doing stuff. So now your body does need fuel. So trying to work on, you know, if you're not eating breakfast now, then it could be, you know, getting a couple hundred calories in and making sure there's at least some protein and carbohydrates with it. And then maybe working on trying to increase that. I find that people that eat their biggest meals in the morning and midday usually do the best all day long because they're giving themselves fuel for the times that they're doing things. So that's available for them to utilize. The ones that kind of skip breakfast, you know, then get into lunch and then maybe eat a bigger dinner or whatever they do, tend to not do as well and usually might have more problems sleeping or whatever, or they'll end up binging at night because they haven't kind of consumed enough during the day. And those are the same people that usually wake up and go, I don't have an appetite. And usually that means is that your body is just waking up slightly stressed. And anytime you're stressed, it will usually kill your appetite until it doesn't. Meaning eventually when you kind of get out of the stress system, now the appetite will show up and then you're going to want to eat everything in sight. But when you're usually in it, like in the middle of stress, because when you're in that fight or flight, the digestive system just shuts down, right? It doesn't function in the fight or flight. It only functions in that rest and digest or that parasympathetic state. And so it literally gets messages to shut down. And so it just stops. It's not producing the enzymes, it's not moving, you know, or it is slightly. And so you won't feel that hungry normally until you kind of get out of it. And now you are ravished. And then you're going to eat everything in sight. So work and focus on breakfast, try to get some protein and carbohydrates, you know, and some minerals within that meal. And, you know, that's why it's good to have some fruit or some juice or something and kind of experiment like what works best for you. For most women, I usually would say 25 or 30 grams of protein. And depending on where you are and depending on what kind of dietary approach you're coming from, either equal up to double or triple the amount of carbohydrates. So you kind of have to mess with it and see what feels best for you. But this isn't a here, eat this meal, and this is going to work for you the rest of your life. It is, where are you now? Where do you need to initially be? And then slowly shift depending on how your body adjusts. Because the other component is, as people get more metabolically healthy, meaning they're able to convert their food into energy effectively, then they will need to eat more. Because if you want to keep the fire going, you got to keep putting wood on it. And as the fire gets bigger, you got to put bigger wood on it. And that's kind of where we want to get. We want the goal to be that, like, we want you to be able to utilize a lot of food, but we want to be able to convert it. if we can't convert it for whatever reason, then we might need to pull the food back a little bit until we can figure out what is inhibiting that process and then kind of address that. And so, and that's why I say to you, look, find out, because there is a number. I assure you, if you stopped eating right now, you wouldn't gain any more weight. You would lose weight, right? So regardless of what's going on, there's just a measure of your, that the body's getting more than it can handle right now. Okay. And so, so that means that there is a number that will regulate and maintain your weight. And just what is that number? And then you have to kind of work within that and say, okay, is there things within here I can adjust? Or can I just work on my sunlight right now and not change anything else and see how that feels to me?
Sure. Yeah. Lovely. I did want to ask you, because you mentioned minerals several times, what are your favorite sources of minerals?
Food. So, certainly for your, like, your major electrolytes, potassium and, like, sodium, magnesium, then it would be, like, well-cooked vegetables for magnesium. Fruits are a great potassium source. That's why I love orange juice. It's a great potassium source. I mean, I will add white salt to basically anything. And so calcium, dairy sources are great. That's what where you're going to get most of your calcium sources from. And then you have all these other kind of micro minerals, like zinc, copper. And then I, you know, I tell most people to try to get a good dose of beef liver in every week, or a big dose of oysters or shellfish every week, because those contain a lot of those minerals in them. And you should be able to cover most of your needs in just one or two servings of those food. And so if you can kind of get the basis of those foods within your diet, and that's why I like Chronometer as well as a food app, because it shows you at the bottom of the app, are you getting all your nutrients in? And then it says specifically which ones you're not. So then you're like, oh, let me add this food in then so I can meet my needs. Because, you know, we have to take into consideration that our food quality probably isn't as good as it used to be because our soils are not as good. And not everybody can afford organic foods. So we have to do the best we can with what's available for us. And you can still get good foods that are non-organic. Just clean them really well. And, you know, and you got to just do the best you can, because you don't want to create more stress on yourself. Like, oh my God, I can't eat these foods.
Right.
So, you know, and things like beef liver, they're really cheap. Right. And, you know, because people are like, what about beef liver supplements? I'm like, well, liver supplements are going to cost you about $50 a month, whereas beef liver will cost you about $4 a month. And so, in my opinion, you're going to get way more nutrition out of the actual real food. But I know it's not a favorite to most people.
No,
same
definitely.
Thing, like, you know, you can get a can of oysters in water for $4, and that could be your zinc for the week. You know, but there are ways you can do it. I understand not everybody loves these foods, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, these are ways to get these foods in that are fairly cheap and probably give you a good bang for your buck without spending excessive amounts of money. I mean, I have some people that are spending hundreds and hundreds on like 20 different supplements a week. And it's like, can we try and get it all from food? It usually is going to be, you know, less expensive for you, and you'll probably get more out of it because it is a food source and not a supplement source.
Yeah. I was one of those people. I remember my supplement bill used to be about $400 a month.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, man, those supplements were like a lifeline. I was like, this is what I need to have to be well. And now I take I take beef liver because I really don't like the taste, the smell, or the texture of it.
Yeah, but you're not the only one.
I take beef liver. Occasionally, I take some turmeric, just extra turmeric. But yeah, I really don't take a lot of supplements. Sometimes I use some trace minerals if I feel like I'm getting low in minerals or whatever. But yeah, yeah. It gets more money to put towards food rather than supplements.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I get why people do it. And I'm not saying I don't use some supplements, but it's like, it's usually the last resort. And it's like, can we do this? Can we try and get these foods in? And I usually find that people respond better to the foods than to the supplements. But again, if you're not going to eat them, then yeah, the supplement might be the next best option, you know, but we have to understand that supplements are highly unregulated. We have no idea if what's really in those things. We do not test them. We just do not know. And so, you know, there's certainly arguments for not taking supplements at all, and that they're just probably expensive, making expensive pee, because you could be peeing out all these things. Certainly some people say, I take this and I feel a lot better. Okay. You know, is it the supplement, or who knows? Are you just going to get a really strong placebo effect, which we know is very possible. So, you know, my goal is always to try to figure out how can we do this with your food? How can we kind of treat your system and regulate you with certain food strategies so that you can feel more grounded and make better decisions? You know, it is going to be a combination of using the food and, you know, looking at your life. You know that there's many ways to skin a cat, and there's, you know, and you might have to skin it in a lot of different ways. And so you work on the food, but you have to certainly work on these other things if they're affecting you. If you're, you know, I always say like nutrition is like the bulletproof vest that you can walk in the war with, but usually the best answer is just get out of the war. You know, so if you're constantly walking into a stress system constantly all the time, you know, if you have a really good bulletproof vest, you're probably good. But if you're already fragile, it's not going to help you as much. So you got to kind of get out of the war first, kind of get yourself more regulated. If you decide to go back in it when you feel better, okay, that's your decision. But you'll probably be able to manage it better when you're a little bit healthier.
I love that. Love that so much. Well, can you tell my listeners where they can find you, follow you, or anything else that you'd like to share?
They can find me on Instagram or Facebook at Kate Deering Fitness, or they can go to my website at katedeering.com. Of course, they can always purchase my book off Amazon called How to Heal Your Metabolism. I'm in the midst of writing a second book that could turn into a third book right now that just seems like it's going on forever. But it's going to talk a lot about all of these kind of, as I refer to them, as blocks, like energy blocks that are kind of inhibiting the ability for you to produce energy, and kind of getting a deeper understanding of those so that people can actually see, you know, why they might be storing fuel versus using it, even though they might need it. Hopefully it'll give them a better understanding of that.
Yeah. Let me know when that comes out. Do you have an ETA on that yet?
It is an ever moving ETA because I keep adding additional chapters and changing them. It was going to be around August. The next one we have is about 5 months, because I feel like I probably have a good 5+ chapters that need to be written and then rewritten and so forth. So that hopefully before the end of the year.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, we'll put links to all the things you just mentioned in the show notes.
Awesome.
So people can click on those and check them out. And I'm a big fan of your work. So thank you so much for being here today. It was an honor to have you on my show.
Well, thanks, Lindsay. Pleasure being here.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end of this episode. Stay in touch with me by joining my email list at lindsaylockett.com/email. And feel free to follow along on Instagram at @IAmLindsayLockett. Finally, you can check out all of my offerings, including courses, private coaching, and workshops on my website at lindsaylockett.com.